Okay, I need you to explain something to me because I can't make any sense of it.
Can you explain to me the point of a Turkish getup?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You put as much weight in your hand as you possibly can, and you start by lying on the ground, and then you stand up with it.
Is there any, like, but is, what's the point? Like, I don't understand. I see these kids, and it's supposed to be, like, am I supposed to be impressed by this?
I mean, I think it's impressive that no one has killed them. I can't say no one, but not many people.
I hope they all do.
You don't really get the public, you know, the public opinion of them killing themselves.
My whole point of working out is so I don't ever end up on my back.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat, when the world ends, I'm going to eat the motherfuckers who think they're good at Turkish get-ups.
So
they're the first one to go.
Who's going to win the fight? You, sort of built like a grizzly bear, or, you know, this kid with maybe, we'll say, 70, 80 pounds. Turkish get-upping.
Is that the term? Turkish get-upping? It's a verb.
You can make an acronym, TGU.
Oh, they don't do that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my, that is like my worlds colliding of like my two least favorite things.
The three-letter acronym.
I just have never been out, like, it's not, it's like, speaking Japanese is difficult.
Right.
But it has no bearing on my life. Sure, Turkish get-ups can be difficult, but it has no bearing on my... Like, there's no transfer to that. Like, I don't understand. Like, It's like speaking Pig Latin. Cool. You spent time on this useless endeavor, and now you're better at it than other people who haven't tried. Like, there's... I fucking struggle with it every day of my life. It's just... I hope to God this stops.
Yeah, the best part is when people do it with a barbell. Like, okay,
I've seen it.
You have a barbell, and I'm holding on to it doing a Turkish get-up.
Yeah.
And I have almost killed myself nearly every second of this endeavor.
Just, like, waiting for that, like, plate to guillotine their head off the entire time. I could go for days. I just
interesting
can't.
Concept.
Just Turkish, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
That's my...
Snatch a barbell.
What are we on right now?
Episode 9.
Holy
That's
shit.
RX Radio.
Oh my god, we've almost made it to double digits.
Yep. Dr. Jordan Genta, Dr. Jordan Shallow here. Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah.
Let's start off with this time. Make sure you guys like, share, subscribe. Give us that 5-star rating, all fives.
So today, recovery.
Recovery.
And I think this is fitting. So, I mean, this will go... By the time this gets out, 2 weeks, probably, like, you'll be in the midst of the Open.
Yes, the CrossFit
Games
Open. And
I'll be about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks out from competition. So I think it's a really good time to cover recovery as a topic. We've sort of touched on it here and there, some nutrition stuff, some of the Q&As that we covered in past episodes. But I think to hone in on this right now, because we're going through it.
Yeah,
like we walk
absolutely.
In here. You're eating coffee. Is that what I'm seeing?
It's yes. I want to say first of all, thank you, Jen, for giving those to me. But I tried an edible coffee gummy thing today. One of the most horrible things I've ever put in my mouth.
It just looks like congealed coffee beans.
Yeah, it's like if someone scraped the coffee grounds out of their filter and said, "Hey, let's throw some sugar in this and put it in a block."
Yeah.
That's what it is.
It's like if you licked the aisle of the grocery store where they used to grind up coffee beans. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, it's a pretty disgusting thing to have in your mouth.
Mm.
But I mean,
that's where we're at on the recovery side of things. We're literally eating coffee.
Yeah.
We're just shy of like the caffeine suppository.
Yeah, that's the next step.
So I think let's start by, like, first I want to address that I think there's a common misconception for what people think recovery is. And we might perpetuate this a little bit ourselves through, like, our social media accounts. Because I think people automatically tie recovery into, like, foam rollers and bands and, like, flossing and, like, lacrosse ball. And it's like, first off, I know people who own lacrosse balls who don't know what what lacrosse is. Like, they think... The sport was founded after, like, Kelly Starrett started telling people to use lacrosse balls. So it's like, I mean, the sport of lacrosse, or at least lacrosse manufacturing goods and services companies, owes, like, mobility and this idea of recovery a huge debt of gratitude. And maybe, like, a financial kickback for how prominent the lacrosse ball has now become.
Oh, yeah.
But I think people think that's recovery, right? But that's not.
Right. That's more of a everyday maintenance kind of thing. And there's, we'll talk about the differences as we go on with this episode, but you do need a certain level of day-to-day maintenance just to make sure that your muscles are working correctly, your body's feeling good, you're keeping inflammation, stuff like that down. But that's not truly recovery. You know, that foam roller is not going to help you recover quite so much as opposed to, you know, what you're doing in between your workouts, after your workouts. The topics that we're really going to touch on today are more so metabolic and neurological recovery. You know, when someone says, my fucking CNS is fried, dude, I squat so heavy.
Usually,
what the fuck does that? We'll talk about what that really means and what, you know, the means of getting yourself to a place where neurologically your nerves are telling your muscles to do the right thing, your body's responding right, cognitively you're clear, and on a metabolic level, those, you know, your muscles are actually working at their peak performance.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's a really good way to subcategorize it, like metabolic and neurologic, because I think that's really, if you can master both of those, then I think you, that daily maintenance stuff that people think is recovery, all of a sudden has to become a lot less.
Right.
Right? Like the amount of people I see, like, just rolling around on, like, the turf with the roller. And I mean, I'm guilty of it to a certain extent, but I like to think mine hinges on a decent amount of assessment. Like, everything I'm doing is purposeful.
Right.
But knowing full well that that's not recovery. And I know if I'm sleeping better and my diet is where it should be, then I have to do less and less of that as an effect. So let's start metabolic, and let's flip it on you first.
Okay.
Now, I want to sort of take it in two ways, because I think this will be an interesting contrast. Metabolic, as far as like diet, pre-workout, post-workout, even in inner workout in training, but also in competition. Because I think this will be an interesting contrast because, I mean, you're going event all day, always moving, but different. You're working different energy systems, right? Yeah. Where it's like, I know that I'm going to be on the platform for less than like a minute, right? Once the platform is ready, I have a minute to get that bar on my back or off the rack or off the platform. Where you is like, you need to sustain different energy systems throughout the whole day. So in training, how do you sort of strategize your diet as far as like just caloric intake, macronutrients, but also like maybe even supplementation things to help circumvent some of that inflammation so that that maintenance work has to be kept at a minimum on a day-to-day.
Right, right. Yeah, so we'll start with diet. We talked a little bit about both of our general diets in the past. The general layout for me is, well, we'll start with my training regimen. Usually, I do 3 days on, 1 day active recovery, which is different than a rest day.
Sure.
And then I'll do 2 more days on, and then a rest day.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm training 5 days a week. 4 of those 5 days, I will do 2 sessions. 1 of those days, I'll do 1 session.
Okay.
Okay, so Monday through Wednesday is a pretty typical layout. I'll work out in the morning, 10 to noon, and then I will do a second session about 2 to 3 or 3:30 in the afternoon. So
when you wake up, like what's, give me breakfast. Training day, right. It's high volume, higher intensity. What's the first thing you're reaching for?
Right. So a typical breakfast will be about 3 eggs, a couple slices of bacon or sausage, and then a bowl of oatmeal.
Okay.
So nothing too crazy. I am getting some protein, carbs, fat. Then I personally don't like to work out on a full stomach, so that'll be all I eat before I train.
So what time is that meal done, and what time are you starting to lift? Because I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, is that window.
Right, so that's, breakfast is about 7 a.m.
Okay.
I'll start to work out about 10, like I said.
Okay.
So there's plenty of time to digest. My stomach's pretty empty by the time I'm actually hitting that first session.
All right.
As far as supplementation goes, before my workouts, I like to take branched chain aminos, and in the morning I will take a multivitamin, fish oil, and I also take glucosamine and chondroitin for my joints.
Okay.
Just for cartilage health. That's basically it though. I don't supplement too much. The main thing for me, and this kind of falls into the metabolic recovery, all of this kind of does, keeping inflammation down, right? Fish oil, that glucosamine, chondroitin. For me, it's primarily my knees that I have problems with.
Yeah.
A lot of squatting, you know, a lot of movement.
Yeah.
Running, jumping as well.
So you guys do a lot of impact.
Yeah, exactly.
Like running on your body weight is more force
into your knees than squatting at my body weight.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, so that's, it's recovery, it's preventative, it's all that stuff wrapped together. Fish oil, I recommend to every single person on this earth. You should.
How many do you take? Or how many?
I take about a gram of EPA, DHA.
Combined. Okay, see, because that's the difference, right? People don't understand. It's like, you know, they're just sucking out the ass of a fish, and they're like, oh, yeah, no, it's great. I take, like, awesome. Whatever, like 500 megs a day, and it's like, yeah, but, you know, there's fish oil is the labeled supplement, but what you're after...
EPA, DHA.
DHA, right.
They're the two things that are going to, you know, really make the difference. Yeah. The anti-inflammatory, they're good for brain, heart, health, all that stuff.
Yeah. So this is, I mean, this is, it's funny because you talked about BCAAs, which are, I mean, usually isoleucine, leucine, and valine, right? So essential amino acids.
Yes.
Right? They're three of, there's nine essentials.
Yeah.
Right? And then you're taking your two major essential fatty acids, EPA, DHA.
Uh-huh.
Now, how does that change in the day of a competition? Because you guys don't do weigh-ins, right? Like, you don't have weigh-ins. It's just you
show up. No, for weightlifting, there's weigh-ins, which is a whole different thing.
But like CrossFit.
Which I do compete in a little bit. But yes, CrossFit, no weigh-ins. My diet won't change much. Actually, the biggest thing that... So on a competition day, my main focus are, you know, those events, however many it may be. But the biggest adjustment to my diet... is more carbs and usually quick carbs.
Okay.
And I personally like to get those in the form of fruits. So I'm big on berries.
All
right. I'll eat a lot of berries in the morning, things like that. Or there's you know, glorified Whole Foods expensive baby food.
Okay.
It's basically just like mashed up fruit in a pouch with probiotics to make it easier to digest and quicker digesting.
So
stuff is really.
I'm not super familiar with like the time frame of like a CrossFit. Like you're at regionals, you're down in Del Mar, you're doing the California regionals. What time does the first event start? How many events do you do, and when does the last event end?
Right. So for me, typically there will be an event somewhere around 10 o'clock to noon.
Okay.
And then I'll have about a 2 to 3 hour break, and then somewhere from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock.
So there's two events.
Two events per day, typically at regionals.
How many days?
3 days in a row.
Okay. So end of day two.
Yes.
Fatigue is peaked, I'd imagine.
Absolutely.
You're like on your way. You know you got two to go. You can do the last day on adrenaline. What's going in the tank?
Right.
The end of day two.
Fantastic question. So... like I said, my diet changes in competition. I'll have more of those quick carbs in the morning.
Yeah.
I'll try and get those slower carbs at night. Yeah. So, you know, whether it's grains, whether it's, you know, pasta.
Are you going for it? Like, are you... because you got to be starving. Like, at the end of day two, you got to be, like, famished.
Oh, yeah. It's because I'm personally the type of person that I won't eat too much during competition.
Yeah.
I'll pick little things here and there. That's why, you know, it's mostly carbs that I'm getting in, because that's going to be your energy, right?
In and out. Yeah.
So carbs and caffeine, the two essential seeds.
Yeah,
they're my two essential food groups. No, but those are the things I'll be on throughout the day.
Yeah.
And then I'll make sure I get a really good protein meal in.
Yeah.
Fats, give or take, you know, they're going to be there usually.
Not a priority.
Not a priority. Sure. Exactly. It's going to be protein and carbohydrates. So at night, it's larger portions of carbohydrates, something that's going to be a little slower absorbing, helped to restore those glycogen stores.
Yeah.
And then for me, it's a little bit of that neurological, a little bit of that metabolic recovery. Okay. So some things that I'm pretty big on is a little bit of that range of motion stretching stuff.
Yeah.
That's going to help your muscles feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
But I like to use a muscle stim machine. Okay, I use a compact muscle stim machine just to keep the blood flowing through there. And that's not too much different at that point than if I were to hop on, you know, a stationary bike and pedal for a half hour just at a slow rate. Just to flush those metabolites, that muscle breakdown.
So let me get this. So you eat and then on the stim unit, on sort of a passive modality to sort of promote circulation, something like that.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
I think bodybuilders do something similar.
Yeah.
When they'll do like a refeed before a show or something like that if they're gone super depleted, and then they'll just like they'll go catch a pump or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's interesting. And now the morning of the third day, back to status quo, same thing.
Yes. Yeah, so I'll wake up. I'll do a stretching session, something like a Ramadan, something like that. Eat those carbs, get a pretty typical breakfast in. I try not to change my diet a lot.
Yeah.
Just a little more emphasis on those things that are going to help me keep my energy levels high.
Sure.
The two essential C's, of course. and then that morning, then it may be a little bit of foam rolling. You know, after 2 days of competition, you're starting to stiffen up a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's going to be exercise-specific warm-ups, too.
When do you know what you're doing?
I'll have at least a week.
Okay, so they give you the layout. Exact events. Okay, all right.
At
so
least a week up to 4 weeks.
Okay, so you can sort of strategize diet, mobility, prehab, maintenance stuff.
Usually by the time I get there, I've been through it already. So okay. I've practiced a full run through.
I gotcha.
So I'll know the series of events and how, to some extent, how I'm going to feel by day three.
Yeah.
So I can cater to that a little bit.
Yeah. So you've been able to do like a mock.
Yeah.
A mock sort of games a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all right. So we've walked through training. We've walked through competition.
Yes.
Now, this is kind of the fun part. When it's over, what is the first thing you're reaching for? It's like, you don't be in the gym tomorrow. You don't gotta, gotta do a WOD or a Fran or some other arbitrary girl name thing. What's in your hand?
Yeah.
A cold one?
See, a lot of people think that a beer is like the last thing I want.
You're so smart. Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way, but it's like, I feel like CrossFit has really sort of like broed out a little bit, like frat boyed a bit, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, like what's that one, like Warrior Dash or some shit? You run 5 miles
Spartan race
out of
and then
fucking
you drink
Warsaw
beer and eat Quest bars.
It's fucking hate that. Like, here's a Dos Equis.
Yeah.
You know, people
for
60,
your efforts.
Yeah, people 60 years ago had to get under barbed wire because Nazis were fucking chasing them. You do it on a casual fucking Saturday because you hate your life. Like, I just, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, the mindset of someone that does stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's like that sort of a culture that that CrossFit has seemed to adopt, like a very like jock sort of frat
boy.
It
can be that way, but me personally, because it takes a lot of discipline, everything to get to that level. So, and I'm not saying I don't eat ice cream often.
No, fuck yeah, no.
But that's, I mean, last year after regionals, that's the first thing I wanted.
Okay.
I wanted some fucking ice cream. I wanted a fat steak.
Yeah.
Just a good meal, and I want to fucking lay down in bed for the next 3 days. I don't want to move.
You could do now. So at that point, it's more like you can get into the pro-inflammatory side of foods and red meat arachidonic acid and all the omega sixes and all that shit. But at that point, do you just not give a shit? Like,
At the end of it, no, I don't give a shit.
Okay, we'll
but
worry
I
about
try
that.
I try to keep a pretty low inflammatory diet the way it is.
Yeah,
I do eat red meat. I don't eat it every day.
You know what? I'm sick of red meat getting shit on. And I don't know if it's like a geographical thing or a chronological thing. Like, I don't know if it's just like it's time to, you know, have shitty research. Or
I think Coca-Cola
like,
is paying, they're funding these
probably
studies.
Yeah. Too many people are reaching for a ribeye instead of a nice glass of Coca-Cola. But it's like, it's the people that try and like put, you know, if you have an ethical or moral issue with eating meat, by all means. But if you're trying to preach me some health shit and you're fucking eating hemp shoelaces and you're fucking wearing a, like, I can't stand that. Like, it drives me absolutely insane where it's like, red meat is healthy for you. Well sourced, you know, I'm not going to go to Whole Foods and blow my whole paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, fuck it. There's some hormones in it.
I do that every day.
Yeah, as we just saw. But yeah, no, it drives me insane. People like the fatwa against red meat nowadays. It's just like, give it a rest. Everyone's going to die.
You know,
I'm going out ribeye in fucking hand, man.
You know what the problem is? So much more of an extent than red meat.
Yeah.
Fucking sugar.
Sugar. Oh,
sugar is so inflammatory. There's literally no benefit to eating just sugar.
Yeah, other than feeling fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Other than feeling like the man.
Exactly, yeah. You feel good when you eat that sugar.
UCSF? UCSF did like a functional MRI brain study on the effects of like addiction centers in the brain. So I think it's the amygdala, if I'm not mistaken, is like the main addictive center of the brain. It's sort of like top of the brain stem and sort of makes this like C looking thing. It's like, it's like a question mark. And if it was the dot of the question mark, like that's your amygdala. All
right.
And they watch, yeah, little neuroscience brain mapping for all you, you know, all you bros out there. So anyways, what they saw was that the addictive centers of the brain light up for sugar in really similar patterns as light up for coke. Like okay. Cocaine.
All right.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. And trust me, as someone who's like 3 weeks, 4 weeks out and carbohydrates are a distant memory at this point, it's like I can totally, I've never done blow before. I've heard mixed reviews. I don't want to say I've heard great things. I've heard great things from bad people about cocaine. Okay. So let's just always consider the source.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like, it's very addictive. Like you said, not useful. But at that point, you've gone through the fire.
Yeah.
Fuck it. The kid's having ice cream.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Coming out of it, I'm celebrating at this point. I'm not preparing anymore. Yeah, the work has been done. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, also a good point is think about the foods that are going to help get you to your goal, right?
Sure.
If your fucking knees hurt every day, you know, you're a powerlifter, your knees hurt every day when you're squatting, maybe you need to look at that diet and say, hey, I need to cut out some of this sugar.
Yeah.
Or I need to stop drinking a beer before bed. Yeah. Shit like that.
That's the thing. It's like, I find people lean one way too hard one way or the other when it comes to like joint related injuries. It's like people either go mechanical solution for what they think is a purely mechanical problem, or they go a chemical solution for what they think is a purely chemical problem. And it's like, it's usually a bit of both. A mechanical aberration is going to lead to an increased amount of inflammation and like, you know, substrates and pro-inflammatory chemicals. You're not going to chondroitin sulfate the shit out of like poor internal hip rotation causing patella tendonitis. You're not going to do that, right?
You're just eating shark fins.
Yeah, exactly. Just fucking shark fins. I feel like Pete is going to have a real issue with this episode. We're going to have like some like greed piecers or something come kick down the door.
Right hand on my heart. I've never killed a shark.
Yeah. That's good to know. A weird thing that you got to come out and say that though. But yeah, so it's like I find people with joint injuries, they can't take a balanced approach, right? It's like, you know, it's what supplement can I take for my knees? And it's like, well, you know, you COX-1 inhibition, cyclooxygenase, fish oils will technically help with inflammation. But if you have a constant source of, you know, aberrant movement causing inflammation under load, then, you know, it's like your rim is bent, your tire is popped. And what are you doing? You're changing the oil. Like, oh, yeah, this will totally, it's fine. Yeah, I took it to the mechanic. We're
fantastic
good.
Analogy.
But, yeah, so I think, like, that's a pretty good synopsis of, like, your dietary intake as far as controlling, like, muscle soreness, inflammation, stuff like that. So that's an interesting sort of look. Yeah, me.
Yeah, let's flip it on you.
This might be, like, so supplement or food wise, I mean, I've said before, I'm not a huge carb guy. Just like I come in at this top end weight wise of 110 kilos, so 242. So I cut down to that.
Right.
Being a fat kid from day one, like me and carbs, like it's a love hate thing. Like right now, I really love them. I hate that I love them. I miss them so much. But for me, it's like, dietary intake of fat is everything to me. Like protein and fat, well sourced, but also variety of protein makes a big difference. Like I know like these ground turkey and rice kids that are just like that's all they eat, and it's like you're gonna get a different amino acid profile from different sources of protein. I think a lot of people don't realize that. And they might not be at a position in their athletics or in their sport or in their training to really benefit from that. But for me, it's like, you know, I'll cycle through chicken, fish, turkey, bison, lamb. I mean, different ratios of fat to protein, but also different amino acids. Like, I mean, egg whites, I think, have the most favorable amino acid profile. And then whey protein supplementation, it's there. I work fucking three jobs. I'm having protein. If you say, like, oh, we should eat, like, whole foods, it's like no one at the top of their game is just, like, sitting there. Unless there's some, like, rich asshole that doesn't have to work and can just sit around and have some
meal prep all the time.
Yeah. Well, there was that one. Who's the Olympic lifter that made it big? He was, like, a vegan.
It was like Kendrick Ferris, dude. He's the only male we sent to the Olympics.
Sure. This past game. And it's like, if you think for a second that me and you are going to go vegan and that we're going to be headed to wherever the next games is, and it's like, people saw that and they ran with it. How many, like, man, you don't even need to, like, eat, like, this guy. And it's like, this guy is a freak of nature. Yeah. Like, homeboy can move weights. Like, just genetics. It's like, you can't.
Yeah.
You
he's, can't. He's one of the entire country.
Yeah.
Right? That's how rare of a human he is.
Seriously. Like,
he's the best male lifter in America at this time.
He could be going in hucking straight gummy bears and he would outlift the shit out of me and you, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That drove me insane when I saw that because it was just like, you know, I mean, vegans are like people that went to Harvard. Within 15 seconds of talking to them, you know they're vegan or you know they went to Harvard. It's just like, okay, I get it. And that just gave him like, it was like, it was like their big brother. Like, if he ever got into, like, an altercation with him, he'd be like, yeah, well, that guy is, like, vegan, too. It's like, and he's going to kick your ass. Like, relax. Yeah. Right, but go eat a fucking lentil or whatever you guys do. But, yeah, so for me, it's like, in training, I try and go eat every 3 hours. And I'm not, like, a huge, like, proponent of, like, you know, a lot of bodybuilders like set timers and stuff. I'm just hungry after 3 hours because I don't eat large quantity meals as far as gram weight of food because with a fat content, they're large caloric meals, right? Like it doesn't
digest a little bit slower.
Yeah, and it takes half the actual weight of food to get the more than double the amount of calories, right?
Like you get 9 calories per gram fat, 4 for a carbohydrate. Exactly. Protein.
So for me, it's like 4 whole eggs in the morning, half an avocado, some black coffee. Might, if I'm really like in a state of ketosis or low calories, I'll put some butter in the coffee. I'll put some coconut oil.
Oh, getting a little bulletproof.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, it's just for me. It's like I need to get the calories some way, and it's not heavy. Second meal, egg whites, avocado, or I'll bridge it with like a protein shake and peanut butter. Now I do this, I mean, for the fats primarily. Protein just stays like a constant.
Yeah.
I go back and forth on like putting carbs in pre-workout depending on what it is. Post-workout, I mean, I always try and do a lot of volume after my main lift. So right now my training is like doubles, triples, and then accessory work. So if I'm doing higher volume on like hypertrophy style stuff, yeah, I'll have some carbs, but the fact I need to keep my weight in check, sort of watching the intake of carbs post-workout. But for me, like on a supplementation wise, like I think fish oils are big.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest one will be supplementation comes more towards the neurological side. So we'll talk on that a bit later.
Yeah.
One thing that I really like from a supplement standpoint, caffeine. Man, I'm like you.
Yes.
Like caffeine to me is like the way to go. But again, a little more on the neurological side of things.
Right.
Inter-workout nutrition, because I have time. I mean, that's the thing with you. It's like you can't, you'd have to wear a fucking camelback to be sucking back like BCAAs. So there's actually some out now that actually have like that promote like a state of ketosis that actually, I mean, so branched chain amino acids in a lower calorie state, research goes back and forth. You know what? It tastes good. There's aspartame or ascorbate potassium or aspartame or whatever artificial. I don't care. At that point, it's like, hey, this isn't water or I'm not drinking my own blood or sweat. Sweet. I'm drinking it. Don't take this away from me because I'm going back to eating egg whites after this.
Yeah.
So inner workout nutrition is something that I've been toying with here and there. Post-workout nutrition, honestly, like from a timing standpoint, I go back and forth on it, especially as I'm like trying to drop weight.
Yeah.
I'll push that meal further back. Like if my goal is ketosis, if I go through a workout and I mean, I have an inner workout now that I use specifically, it's designed quote unquote for going in like it's in ketosis, like not having carbs, where a lot of bodybuilders will go like the branch chain cyclic dextrin, the guys that used to do like dextrose, like fast dissolving carbs. I sort of go the opposite way where it's like, well, if I'm going to be in this stress response metabolically, I'm going to further as far as I can. So I'll be 2 hours post-workout before I have a meal. I have a little narrower window going into a workout than you. I go 45 minutes. My pre-workout meal is done 45 minutes beforehand. Then on with the stimulants, on with the inner workout.
Now I want to flip it. Well, actually, let's talk in competition.
Yeah.
Because that's where things get. Because with weigh-ins, right?
It's game day, man.
It gets so. I mean, I go two routes. I either go 24 hours or 2 hours. So this is my first time with 2 hours. So I'm coming in a lot lighter than I would before. Because last meet, I dropped 26 pounds from Friday to Sunday. Or sorry, Sunday to Friday.
Fuck.
But put on 24 pounds from Friday to Saturday.
I haven't put on 24 pounds since middle school.
I mean, it's fun, and like if you do it, I mean, it's suffering. Like you go through it, man. I think
I've wrestled, so I know what it is to lose weight. I know it. That's not a fun process. No,
but I mean, to me, it's like if you have 24 hours, that's plenty of time to get your weight back. So you can pretty much go through hell for a few days and like just be starving, and then it not affect you. But with 2 hour weigh-ins, it's going to be a little different.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing going in after a weigh-in, if you've had to cut weight or dehydrate, is salt intake.
Okay.
So that's something I've sort of been schooled on lately by my coach, is like people go straight for the carbs, they go right for the sugar. That's pro-inflammatory in your GI tract. Your belt's not going to fit, right? You're just going to distend out. You're going to be like Violet Beauregard from fucking, what's that?
Charlie the Chocolate
Factory. Thank you. Yeah.
Blueberry.
So, yeah, so, I mean, that to me is like salt and carbs, because I go very little carb throughout the end of my training cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, morning of the meet, give me carbs and caffeine, the two C's, fucking to the moon. Because like a lot of guys, if they have a lighter body weight, they can maintain carbs and they have a decent insulin sensitivity. But because I never have them, when I have them, dude, look out. Like, I'm ready to go. So I'll purposely do some of my heavier sessions later in the training cycle, low volume, high intensity, doubles, triples, on a day of no carbs. Because if I can go in there and I can feel the belt digging between my ribs and my pelvis, and I'm just like, I just feel like a skeleton, but I can hit the weight. I know for a fact that if I get to load up on like, Just even oatmeal and like pancakes, something with some salt in it before, I'm going to be the dude. Like, I'm going to be the man on the platform. So I think having that foresight of knowing, like digging yourself into a hole so that if you can put yourself at a metabolic advantage on the platform, then you'll be that much better off for it. Because the idea is to lift what you've never lifted before. You don't want that one rep max coming in the gym. You want it second attempt, third attempt.
Oh, yeah.
But then I'm like you, dude. After the meet,
yeah.
YOLO. Like, literally, all bets are off. I mean, so last time, putting the weight back on, that was the important shit. Like, my coach, like, you need to put on, like, 5 kilos, 10 kilos, or like, 5-7 kilos today.
Yeah.
Because it makes, I mean, weight moves weight, right? And so it just, so I weighed in the East Bay at 109 kilos. I had put on 13 pounds on a 45-minute drive back. IHOP.
That is fucking ridiculous.
I had like commuter brownies and ice cream. Like, just didn't give a shit. But all went back on. All went well. But yeah, so that would be my sort of metabolic take on recovery. Very different in training depending on like weigh-ins, 24 hours or 2 hours. And very different in the meet itself. So like when I compete, I'm very similar. Because it's a long day. But we do 3 events, but they're really short. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm quick carbs, I'll do stimulants before squat and before deadlift. But I'm, you know, PB&J, honestly, between squat and bench. And then I'll have something more substantial, chicken and rice, and more stims before the deadlift. And then after, it's just anything goes. I want to go back to you and I want to talk about recovery from a neurological standpoint.
Yes.
So I think this is something that gets put furthest to the back burner. I think in order of priority, what people think recovery is the, you know, the flossing and the foam rolling and all that stuff. And then followed secondly, some people on the fringe will be more in tune with like the biochemistry of metabolism and how that can affect recovery. But very little do I hear about neurological recovery.
Right.
And with, you know, people who say like, oh bro, like I need like a deload. It's like, oh really? Yeah, you're training at 24 hour fitness. You don't need a deload. You're not training that hard. But I mean, you at the level you compete at, how do you address recovery from a neurological standpoint?
Yeah, that's a great question. And a big part of that is with the actual training cycles and that deload being in the appropriate place and the training splits throughout the week. So like I said, I'll go 3 days on. So Monday through Wednesday, I'll do two sessions. Thursday, I'll do active recovery. And this in itself is a part of that neurological recovery. When I say active recovery, I don't mean, all right, I just sit around and maybe I'll go for like, you know, a mile walk on a treadmill or something. Then like, that's it. Active recovery to me is getting that heart rate up for an extended period of time. Maybe I'll spend anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes on a bike, on a rower. I hate running, so I'm not going to fucking run on my active recovery day. Something like that, keeping that heart rate up, getting the blood flowing through my entire body, not at a rate where it's going to fatigue me further, but at a rate where I'm going to get that little bit of endorphin flow afterwards. It's going to get a fresh blood supply, good oxygen, nutrients to all of my muscles. And then from there, what I like to incorporate in an active recovery day is a lot of stability work.
Okay.
So I'm big on banded shoulder stuff. Shoulder stability is extremely important in Olympic lifting and CrossFit. Yeah. So I'll do a lot of that stuff and I'll do core work.
Okay.
So anything really. It doesn't have to, just low impact core work that's going to help, you know, benefit that spinal bracing stability that I need on those days where I have a higher intensity.
Now, go ahead.
Yeah, and then I'll go two more days, two sessions on a Friday, one session on a Saturday, and then Saturday night until Sunday night when I go to bed, I'm just focused on getting my body to reset for that next week, whether that's, you know, using muscle stim. Definitely making sure I'm sleeping well. That's when I really try to drill the range of motion stuff.
How many hours do you get?
Sleep?
Yeah.
I need 9 hours of sleep
per
night.
Need
9 hours of sleep per night.
So when I text you at 5 a.m., that's not like personal that you're not texting me back?
No, dude. From my phone goes away at 9 o'clock p.m. and I probably won't pull it out till, you know, my alarm will go off in the morning from somewhere between 6 and 7.
Have you always been like that? Like with the minimizing screen time? Or is that something you've adopted?
That's something I've more recently I've done.
Yeah.
But I just find that it helps me fall asleep. I have less distractions.
Sure.
If I put my phone away 9 o'clock, I like to be, you know, asleep but between 9 and 10, and then I'll wake up between 6 and 7 usually.
How do you now, I mean, neurological recovery is only necessary if you do neurological damage, right? I mean, that's fair to say. How do you program for that to get like a I mean, we put our muscles through stress, right? Like you want to, the idea, hopefully we don't have any like these gypsies out there who still think that like the low 45 minute, you know, you got to make sure you don't go like release cortisol when it's like, okay, no, you need fucking cortisol because that means you worked hard and then you'll compensate with androgens and it gets stronger. But it's the same idea with the nervous system, right? That's how you're going to get stronger, is by taxing that nervous system. Now, how do you program or auto-regulate or draw a hard line in the sand? Because it's like, I feel like when you enter endeavors or sports like we do, where it's like there is a natural sort of Freudian internal dialogue that says, dude, just fucking put this thing down. Get this thing off my back. Right? And so there's an override there.
Right.
And if that override takes you to, it can lead you down the wrong path, right? Like if you if you have this sort of hard-headed sort of, you know, grit grinding, very very meathead sort of mentality, and you just try and push and push and hashtag no days off and blah this that and still you're set or whatever the fuck kids are saying, it's like
that can
be a detriment in itself. So how do you auto-regulate and how do you plan for a nervous system detriment in training, but also to recover from that going into competition?
Yeah, that's the question in training is a little harder to answer than as opposed to competition. Yeah. Competition is usually just straightforward deload.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's a week, whether it's, you know, half a week, 10 days, however you do that, depending on your sport, that's, it's pretty typical no matter what you're doing. In CrossFit, for that pre-competition deload, for me, it's more of that cardiovascular stuff. I can do that stuff, and it's relatively low taxation on my body, neurologically, metabolically. I can keep my heart rate up. I can do, you know, longer rows, runs, bikes, whatever, and I'm not going to get that sore. I'm not going to get that fatigued from it. So that's a good way for me to deload going into competition.
So you'll keep that in longer.
Yes, and I will avoid heavier weights, you know, heavier squatting sessions, heavier deadlifts, heavier Olympic lifting. I'll kind of cut that back, maybe stay a little lighter so I can keep my movement sharp.
Sure.
But not to the point where the actual weights are taxing me.
Is that on a schedule, or is that like, do you, you know, I know a lot of guys do this in powerlifting. 12 days out is my last, you know, deadlift. 10 days out is my last squat. 6 days out is my last, whatever, arbitrarily.
Yeah.
Or, okay. So you have it more scheduled.
Yeah. So it's typically a week for me. It'll be adjusted a little bit for someone depending on how well you know your recovery or what the task is. So if it's the open, which is coming up, that's one workout for me. I don't need to recover a whole week to go hard for one workout.
Sure.
If it's regionals where it's, I don't know, seven workouts, over 3 days, I'm going to need, you know, that whole week, maybe even a little bit more to recover so that, you know, I can go hard every single workout for the entire weekend.
Yeah.
But the, back to the original question, in training, that's a little bit harder to program when you need that deload or when you need to cycle off of whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of times there's training is done in blocks, 6, 8, 12 weeks, maybe not 12, probably 6 to 8 is the usual usual amount. In that, it's going to depend on two things, intensity and recovery, right?
Yeah.
Well, I guess volume to intensity ratio and recovery. So if you have that intensity ramping up and your recovery is not where it should be, you're gonna burn out.
Yeah.
If you have percentages on the paper that you just can't hit because you're not recovering properly, then a deload is going to help, but it's going to help in the sense that you're pulling back your training to compensate for the lack of recovery.
Yeah.
As opposed
that's
to
that's on you.
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to maximizing that recovery so that you can maintain the intensity.
Sure. Stay the course.
So the point of a deload is to, I guess, come back to that homeostasis hormonally, neurologically, metabolically, where you feel good. You feel capable again, right? So not many people are going to be able to push themselves to that level where they need that.
Exactly.
Organically, I guess I'll say.
So much fucking yes behind what you just said.
Yes, because you're not maximizing all the variables to where your training and your training volume and intensity is the factor that's limiting you.
You did not fucking earn a deload.
Exactly. That sums up what I'm saying.
So frustrating.
Is that if you're sleeping, you know, 4 to 6 hours a night, you wake up, you have, you know, a granola bar, a cup of coffee, go off to work, sit down for 6 hours a day, and then go hit the gym. Yeah, of course you're fucking tired. You're treating your body like shit.
Yeah.
You need to recover.
Yeah.
So
don't deprioritize your workouts. You need to start prioritizing your recovery.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's so frustrating. I mean, at the level that we compete at, everyone, you know, when they reference deload is like, yeah, you know what? This guy trains his ass off. Absolutely deload into the meat.
Mm-hmm.
But like arbitrary deloads, I think in training are just, to me, they blow my mind. Like, for people who are at, like, 24-hour fitness, I'm doing, like, 30%, 3x3. It's like, what are you, go home. Are you serious?
30%.
Seriously, like, just stop, just get out of my way. Like, the idea, and it only, I think only elite-level lifters can really have the self-awareness to exact RPE-based or auto-regulating scale. Nobody cares how you feel. That is my take on RP. No one cares how you
especially
feel.
Especially that barbell. That barbell does not give a fuck.
No. Gravity doesn't give a shit how you feel that day. Yep. And I think a lot of people lean on RPE scales as a crutch at a lower level. I know guys and girls at high end, especially in powerlifting, who, you know what? It's because they equate for and prioritize recovery that they are able to use that RPE scale on a consistent basis. Your RPE after going up to San Fran and like going on some Molly bender, getting out of the Uber is like an RPE 10, right? So it's like, how are you going to go fucking lift barbells? You can't because you haven't made that recovery a constant.
Yes.
Now your variable is going to be the weight in training because you're auto-regulating. Give me a fucking break. Like,
exactly.
That to me is like, just separates the men from the boys, like the competitive athletes for the people who just don't give a shit.
Yeah, at that point, you're adapting your training to your lifestyle instead of your lifestyle to your training.
Yeah, get your fucking priorities straight. Lifting weights comes first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something someone told me a while ago when I was pretty young in my CrossFit career, because there was a conversation going on about overtraining. And yes.
I can't believe we've gone this far and not talked about overtraining.
Right. So that's what I'm getting at. And then they said to me, so do you think you're overtraining or under recovering?
Yeah.
It just fucking blew my mind. Yeah. I'm like, that's 100% right.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's doing the same shit here. Like, we're all training just as hard.
Yeah.
But whoever's going to recover better is going to be able to go harder day after day.
Oh, for sure.
You're going to get that, you know, more of an adaptation.
Yeah.
You're going to be the one that's standing on top of that podium.
Seriously.
Right? So, are you training too hard or are you not recovering enough? Are you not prioritizing recovery enough?
Whenever anyone talks to me about, like, deloads and overtraining, my last training, and this brings an interesting point. I want to get your take on this as far as the difference between objectivity and subjectivity with neuro fatigue.
Yeah.
Right? No one cares how you feel. And that should be something that they teach in fucking preschools, especially around here with these, like, these entitled little kids running. Like, everyone thinks that they're a special snowflake. And it's like, no, that's not how anything works, especially if you want to get strong and lift weights. So It's like the idea that, and I'm guilty of this, and I know some of the top end lifters, but they know where to go to get the accountability they need, because there is a difference between subjective and objective neural fatigue, where it's
absolutely,
like, if that bar is fucking moving, I don't care. If it felt like it's a 12 on an RPE scale, If it went from 0 to 60 real quick, guess what? More weight's going on the bar, more reps, higher volume, higher intensity.
Yeah.
And I think it's either having someone around, or the videotape method. Some people find videotaping lifts to be vain. It's like, if you're using it like John Madden game film, it's a tool. It's like, you have any idea how much time college football players spend looking at film?
I don't have an idea, but I can imagine
it's a lot. It's a lot. They spend a ton of time, and it's just like, that which is not managed is not measured, or not measured is not managed. So it's like, If you feel like shit, but if you take a video of yourself and you go, All right, yeah, the bar's coming off the floor, right? Like, it's moving. Yeah. And it's sometimes you need either that feedback from a video or someone saying my last training cycle, my last doubles going into the meet, I couldn't finish a rep at 574, racked it, ended up falling forward and putting my head through a window. I walked into the gym saying I'm done. I'm done. I'm throwing in the towel. I had a good run on this training cycle. My coach is like, no, we're going to put the bucket down and we're going to see what comes out of the well. Lace up. Let's fucking go. Under the bar, one plate, two plate, three plate, 574. And I hit 694 12 days later. But it's like, and in my mind, I owe that squat, that last session, that was it. That was like the difference between making that third attempt and folding up like a fucking lawn chair, was because it's like, now you know what bottom is. When your head goes through a fucking pane of glass and it costs you, that's a $180 workout to have some dude come in from Sunnyvale to fix the fucking window. And it's like, okay, now you're ready. Now Mr. Miyagi sort of looked at me and with his eyebrows and bowed down and was like, all right, go kick some ass sort of thing. So I think that's something that only an accountability of either an acute eye on yourself or an acute eye of a good coach, which we've talked about before. And it makes such a difference, because you need to do neurological damage to benefit from neurological recovery. It's like, you don't need a deload from sitting on the fucking couch your whole life, right? One day in the gym, I'm going to take a week, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about neurological recovery from a supplementation standpoint.
Yeah.
Something I think that's covered. Sleep, fairly intuitive. You just get tired, you fall asleep. But I think where I allocate most of my supplement budget would be to improving the quality of sleep, and also just other things to benefit neural recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So deloading, training, sure. What a lot of people don't do, deloading stimulants.
Ooh, yeah.
Right? So if stimulants by design are sympathomimetics, right? They are analogs to hormones in our body that activate the sympathetic nervous system.
Right.
If we are trying to relax, dude, my last workout, 6, 7, 8, 9 days out, however long, no coffee, no
tea, no anything, no caffeine, nothing. No reason to live, but it's because you regain...
You're describing hell.
Yeah, right now. You regain your affinity for stimulants, like, fairly quickly. Like, right. You know, I'm a cup of coffee and I could go take a nap kind of guy because I drink coffee and pre-workout and shit all the time, all day, every day. But if you take a week and you deal with, like, the withdrawals and, like, the raccoon eyes and just, like, the general... you know, loathing of everyone around you, that's a huge benefit. Because when I, dude, the day I hit the platform, I'm just Tony Montana in like a chalk bowl full of blow. Like, I'm to the fucking moon because I haven't touched a stimulant all week. I've been like, dude, I'm to the point where 2 days before I'm low lights. Like, you know, the apartment is dark. Yeah. It's like I had a concussion and I'm trying to like not have any stimulus at all. Like, people don't realize that sensory input is still activating the nervous system, right?
Oh, so for sure.
Very, like, no loud music, no nothing. It's fucking Enya and candles for, like, 3 days going into the meet. And recovering, no, but, like, not loading up the caffeine, I think, is people overlook it. They don't even think about it because it's so inundated in our everyday life, where that becomes a huge factor for me as far as, like, okay, I'm totally, like, centered, ready to go. Let's get some carbs, let's get some salt, let's get some caffeine, let's get some weight on my back and let's fucking move. Like, that one's big. Also, for like actual supplementation for sleep, because I go in low carb, one that flies under the radar a lot, 5-HT. So it's like that serotonin pathway. So serotonin, if you eat a lot of carbs, not an issue, that's why you feel good, right? That dopamine pathway. But 5-HT is a way to stimulate that pathway in the brain, where serotonin from your GI tract is predominated with carbohydrates, like 90%, which throws a lot of people off. It's like, oh, wait, it's a neurotransmitter, neurobrain. But when your stomach, as people are slowly or quickly realizing now, is like your second brain, right? You eat carbs, you automatically feel good. That serotonin is coming from your GI tract. 5-HT will put you to bed, and then better sleep, better recovery, better home, like better like blood profile of hormones, you know, IGH, IGF, things that sort of circulate through the night. And if you can get deeper into that delta wave sleep, good to go. And then all the things that come after it become that much easier. So that for me is my biggest take on neurological recovery is, you know, deload the caffeine, actually allow your nervous system to recover without an exogenous stimulus.
Right.
But, and, you know, if I am going to supplement, if I was trapped on a desert island, it could bring a metabolic type supplement with me or a neurologic type supplement like 5-HT or fish oil. With the way I train, and if I can keep that mechanical stress down, I would take the 5-HT. I would rather sleep better than have that systemic, because you know, if you sleep better, your inflammation is going to be lower anyways as a result of the hormone pathways that it's going to activate. But yeah, that's sort of my take on metabolic and neurologic. Anything to close this off? Anything we missed?
Oh man, I think we covered a lot of really important things.
Yeah.
All right, so that pretty much sums it up with recovery. So we're making sure that we're not just maintaining with those foam rollers, lacrosse balls, you know, stretches. That stuff's great on a day-to-day, but the recovery really comes in at the metabolic, the neurologic levels. We want to make sure that we're taking care of our body in those ways and in the appropriate way in those ways, so we can maximize our training, not adjust our training to the lack of recovery, right? So that's the main idea that we're talking about today. Don't do Turkish get-ups.
Fuck Turkish get-ups. You know what? I'm making the little Instagram thing. Fuck Turkish get-ups. I don't even care.
It's going to throw so many people off.
I'm over it. Well, I'm pretty sure if you know me by now, I've had this. Like, if you've sat next to me on the bus on the way over here, I'm pretty sure I voiced my displeasure about, like, hey, you look interested in this topic. Oh, yeah? What? Fuck Turkish get-ups. All right, this is my stop. I'll see you later.
Yeah, that's Jordan's biggest pet peeve of the day.
Of the day.
Of the day, because it changes.
We'll see you tomorrow for another Jordan's pet peeve. But yeah, I think I put a good bow on. I think the way you said, the point you highlighted as far as, you know, not tailoring your workouts to your lack of recovery, but benefiting your workouts from a prioritization of your recovery is huge. It's everything. That's the difference between the platform or the podium and, you know, sitting in the parking lot wiping tears away.
Exactly.
I think it's all in your own hands, but people don't, if you don't understand it or recognize it to be your rate limiting factor, then you'll never equate for it. So right. I think you got to take a hard look and sort of self-evaluate. Let's pay some bills.
Yeah, so episode 9, that pretty much sums it up. That's our bit on recovery.
Yeah.
Make sure you guys share this, like, subscribe, give us that 5-star rating. Find us on Facebook and Instagram.
Instagram, we got videos. People are, yeah. They're showing love for the videos. I think the videos are really good.
Yeah, we got some free content for you guys.
Lundy. Kyle, Lundy. Yeah. Keep doing your thing.
Lunderjack Productions. Thanks a lot,
he's,
man.
He's doing a lot more impressive shit with sound than making us not, you know, sound like a couple of chipmunks. So check out him, the artist he produces. And until next time.
All right. We'll see you guys.
See you guys.